It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Sarah Swiger worked for Theater West Virginia and thought she would still have a job there.
Since I had been here, it had always, there'd been issues kind of from the beginning financially, and it was always one of those things that you always heard they were struggling, but you never actually believed that this would actually happen.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. The governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways approved the final piece of recommendations on new sources of funding for the state's roadways. The controversial proposal would generate up to $1 billion in new revenue for future construction of road projects. But as Ashton Mara reports, that money would come from increased tolls on the West Virginia Turnpike.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes clearly have it. The motion is adopted.
With a unanimous vote, the governor's Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways approved a recommendation to not only continue, but also increase the tolls on the West Virginia Turnpike. The bond currently funding the maintenance of the 88 miles of highway will be paid off in 2019. The newest recommendation in their proposal to the governor would allow the State Parkways Authority to again bond the road for $1 billion worth of revenue and continue the tolls to pay off the new debt. 25% of the bond revenue, or $250 million, is recommended to stay in the four counties that house the turnpike for new road projects. The rest of the money could be used toward construction on the Coalfields Expressway or the King Coal Highway, just as an example, basically toward any road construction or expansion statewide.
Given the annual needs that have been identified, it may only seem like a drop in a very large bucket.
Jason Pizzatella serves as the commission's chair and admits their recommendations, which would have to be fully implemented by the governor and the legislature, aren't going to immediately fix the problem. The payout to maintain all of West Virginia's roads grows by $1.3 billion every year. The commission's bond proposal would bring in $1 billion, but it's just one-time funding. To keep up with annual maintenance, the commission has found savings or new income totaling just over $100 million annually. But in total, the recommendations, even with the bond, still leave a major gap in funding.
Are we ever going to be able to catch up?
No, we won't. And, we're never going to have a perfect system. And I don't think any state has a perfect system.
In the past, states, including West Virginia, have relied on federal matching dollars for highway construction. But that revenue is no longer a sure thing.
There's so much uncertainty at the federal level with regard to what the federal government is going to do with the future of the Federal Highway Trust Fund that it makes it hard for states like West Virginia to plan appropriately.
So issuing a new bond on the turnpike, repeatedly called the state's most well-kept roadway by commissioners, may seem like an obvious way to raise a large, reliable sum of money for new projects. But the issue is more than just economic.
You know, there's a political component in everything we do in government, and this is no different.
Politically, enacting the commission's recommendations puts pressure on Southern Democrats, specifically members of the House who were up for re-election in 2014. Issuing a new bond and increasing tolls may not go over well with voters and Democrats struggling to maintain their majority in the lower chamber. But Delegate Margaret Staggers, a Democrat who serves as a non-voting member of the commission, says the governor may have more trouble with her chamber than just those worried about poll numbers.
Well, the House unanimously passed a bill the last time to do away with the tolls in 2019. It wasn't taken up in the Senate, but the feeling is Southern West Virginia shouldn't have to support the rest of the state.
Still, the governor will receive the final report in the next few weeks to consider and use to make suggestions to the legislature. Pizzatella says Tomlin is still considering whether the topic should be taken up in a special session or if it can wait until the regular session in January. The Blue Ribbon Commission's work, however, is not complete with this final report. Members will begin meeting again next year to continue to discuss and conduct studies on future funding sources. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
Today is National POW MIA Day, a national day of observance to remember those service members imprisoned or lost during military action. Glynis Bort visited the American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum housed in the Brook County Public Library. She spoke with Eddie Jackfert, a POW during World War II, who shared memories and advice.
You are examining right now the largest collections of artifacts, memorabilia, photographs, and documents relating to what happened in the Philippine Islands in 1941 through 1945 till the end of the war. And we have.
That's Edward Jackfert, a Wellsburg native. He's describing the American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum that began when he donated his memorabilia to the Brook County Library in 2002. Since then, other donations from other POWs have poured in.
That's just out of this world. It'll take her 5 years to really card all these documents she's getting.
On September 11th, 1940, Jackfert enlisted in the United States Army Air Corps, and soon he was assigned to serve as an airplane mechanic on the Philippine Islands. In June 1941, he was 19 years old.
We were sacrificed and abandoned in the Philippines. We were. 19,000 Americans, troops in there. We were abandoned.
Jackfert vividly remembers the days, months, and years that followed the 1941 December invasion of the Philippine Islands by the Japanese.
We were told about World War II happening in Japan and that they had bombed Pearl Harbor. So I went down to the plane and I come back for lunch. And as I came out of lunch in the room, we heard a group of airplanes. And we looked up and someone said, those are naval planes. Someone said, naval hell, they're Japanese.
Soon after, Jackfert and so many others surrendered. They were without provisions, food, or military support. From there, it was on to the Bataan Death March, or what Jackfert experienced, the hell ships.
October the 9th, as we were going toward Taiwan, I was on top of the deck of the ship, and someone hollered torpedoes. And I looked out in the bunk, there's two torpedoes come right at our ship. And the captain of the ship turned the ship right toward the torpedoes. The torpedoes spanned the ship, one on each side.
Not everyone was so lucky. Well, luck being a matter of your point of view. Air attacks or submarines sank at least 25 of these ships. Inside, POWs were stored in the hulls without facilities or fresh water. They subsisted on scraps, urine, and blood. The very desperate resorted to drinking bilge water. Many expired. Survivors continued on to labor camps.
They made us get into a formation of line of fours and walk through the streets. The streets were lined with Japanese women and Japanese men and Japanese kids. The kids were throwing stones at us. And we held our heads up high and marched straight down the street about 3 miles to a place called Mitsui. And there were big warehouses there. And they had an abandoned office building that they had turned into a POW camp. And that was our quarters for until July the 25th of 1945.
Jackfert worked in a variety of fields over the following years, sometimes carrying rice, sometimes unloading coal. Sometimes the work was heavy. Other times the work carried heavy implications.
We were assigned initially at the Nippon Steel Company. We helped them manufacture steel, which would be made to in ships and so and tanks, which would be used against our troops. So this is what we were forced to do. There's nothing we could do about it. We were working in armaments to assist the Japanese in fighting against Americans. And this really hurt us. It was hard to get over.
In November of 1944, events changed much to the hope and horror of Jackfert and his friends.
We all went up on top of the deck and we looked down toward Tokyo. And there was a B-29 making pictures of Tokyo. That's the first airplane in that area would be November the 1st, 1944. Of course, that was a bad omen for us, too. It was good and bad, because shortly after that, we were bombed almost every night, every night.
8 months later, in July, they were hit. Jackfert is haunted by the memories of digging out suffocated men and collecting the limbs of his comrades. Then in August, they were rescued. Jackfert pointed to a picture on display in the museum of a ship with a red cross on it.
See that red ship, right? That red cross ship there?
Mm-hmm.
We saw it sitting out in the way, and that's where they were taking us. But what we saw the flag. If anything ever hurt you, to make you t- tears come to your eyes. That did. The red, white, and blue of the flag, the United States flag again.
19,000 were taken prisoner. 16,000 returned home. Half of those died within the first 10 years of being home. Today, less than 500 survivors are still alive. The Brook County Library will dedicate new shelves in the museum in recognition of POW MIA Day, with a collection of over 1.5 million artifacts, documents, and photographs, and oral histories. The American Defenders of Bataan and Corregidor Museum has become a center for research. Eddie Jackford says he only hopes that someone will learn something from all this suffering.
Show the people that war is nothing but hell and destruction. Let's teach the young ones this is what you're going to encounter if you don't do something about it. Let's get some schools, let's get some universities, get clubs run, that war will not solve the international problems. We need something else.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wellsburg.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:41. Partly cloudy to the north, mostly cloudy, with some light rain in the south today. Temperatures in the mid-70s to low 80s. Becoming mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain statewide overnight with lows in the 60s. Rain and thunderstorms likely by tomorrow afternoon. Temperatures in the upper 60s to the mid-70s.
Support provided by Chevron, putting billions back in the U.S. economy this year through energy projects that support job growth. More information available at Chevron.com.
The arts community in Beckley is reacting to a summer tradition shutting down. Earlier this week, Theater West Virginia blamed a lack of funding, among other things, for its final curtain call. But as Jessica Lilly found out, the company was approved for state funds that remain unclaimed.
Theater West Virginia is known for state-themed plays like The Hatfields and McCoys, Honey and the Rock, and in 2011, for the first time, Rocket Boys, the musical, the story of Homer Hickam, a McDowell County boy who grew up to work for NASA.
There's a West Virginia town on the map. Feels like it's hardly up from a nap. It's Colwood. Well, time goes by like it wants to stay, and the clouds move only when they're blown away from Colwood.
After 53 seasons, the board of directors decided that financial issues had mounted beyond reach and the company had no choice but to shut down.
I was very disappointed for many different reasons. Theater West obviously means a lot to me.
Treehouse Arts Ensemble co-founder and resident artist at Tamarack, Robbie Moore, worked with Theater West Virginia for about 8 years, playing many roles behind the curtain and behind the scenes.
That leaves a very big hole in the arts in Southern West Virginia and in West Virginia as a whole. And so it, in some ways, maybe it sets back some of our goals for bringing more arts and culture to the area, but hopefully it will, at LAC, will inspire others to step up and we can take a few steps forward.
Beyond bringing historical and entertaining plays and musicals to the public, Theater West Virginia offered a professional training academy for aspiring actors.
I've seen many students and residents of Beckley really gain a sense of appreciation for the arts, and that's something that's beautiful and vital to a community. That's the thing I think that is the most disappointing, is that there's that loss for those students who were so excited about coming back.
Sarah Swiger moved to the area for one of her first professional gigs at Theater West Virginia.
Since I had been here, there'd been issues kind of from the beginning financially, and it was always one of those things that you always heard they were struggling, but you never actually believed that this would actually happen. Like, it was one of those that it always ended up being okay at the end of the day, and it's just one of those things that eventually, unless there's some big restructuring done, then eventually this happens.
12 people lost their jobs. Swiger says she keeps in touch with many of the now former employees who are out of work and headed out of town.
What do we do now? We thought we had worked for 9 months, which is very hard to find in theater. And now it's a process of trying to fill that time, fill that space. And many of them picked up their lives to move here for the next 9 months.
General Manager Gail Bowling also blamed a decline in ticket sales.
I've seen a large response of the community who are saddened by the closing. And, of course, that means a lot, but I just wish that transferred into attendance numbers.
I do hope that it makes them realize that you can't take things for granted. If you love something, no matter what it is, if it's art, if it's food, if it's anything, and especially if it's anything locally grown and made and built in West Virginia, it needs to be treasured almost, because it is, everything is disappearing.
While the arts community is hoping this might be a wake-up call for art lovers in the region, the funding deficit is more complex than just a lack of ticket sales. In an email, Bowling said that a lawmaker's request for funding was denied by the West Virginia Development Office. The Development Office is an administrator of grant funds for the state, including the Local Economic Development Assistance Grant Program. A state lawmaker typically requests those funds on behalf of an organization, such as restoring theater equipment. Then the governor denies or approves those requests. Bowling also said in an email that over the past 5 years, state funding has been reduced by almost $190,000, and more cuts are on the way. The governor ordered a 7.5% budget cut for the fiscal year of 2014 and is expected to mandate the same cut again next year for not just Theater West Virginia, but almost all departments of state government. Theater West Virginia's budget for 2014 was more than $230,000. Burdette says that there is still $9,000 that the theater has not used from grants. One was issued in December of 2012. In 2009, the governor provided an additional $100,000 from his emergency contingency fund and $210,000 in 2012. But there's no indication from Tomlin's office that additional funding will be provided this year to reverse the closure. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jessica Lilly in Beckley.
Iris DeMint performs Go Ahead and Go Home on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
I'm gonna jump in on it here.
Go on ahead and go home. Go on ahead and go home. Boy, you done your best. Time you took your rest in the shelter ain't long. Go on. The river so still, our sorrows come to heal, and wrongs are made right. Down in a deep
Iris DeMint with Go On Ahead and Go Home. You can hear this song again and more music on Mountain Stage Sunday afternoon at 2 right here on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can listen to and read news stories on our website, wvpubcast.org. You can subscribe to the podcast of this program while you're there. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glynis Board, Dave Mistich, and Ashton Mara. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director this week has been Chuck Ansilevich. I'm Beth Voorhees.